I want to read some TYT Lives before we get to the stories in the rundown. Joseph S., straight to the point, and I actually really love this tweet. It's in regard to the last story that we did about the state lawmaker in South Dakota who shared that all lives splatter meme. He says, are you kidding me? She literally said, I think we can all get behind this with a pic of a car running over people. Yeah, I mean, she claimed that she had a different perception of what that meme meant. What more could it possibly mean? I don't know, maybe I'm the dumb one. Maybe I just don't understand. Maybe I have a different interpretation.
It's galaxy brain. You need to be extra woke. It's like the next level of intelligence to understand that these people deserve to die if they're protesting for civil liberties.
It's calculus brain.
Yeah, it's galaxy
next
brain.
Order thinking, stated out stuff.
Yeah, all right, I guess I don't get it.
You egg
I
me
still
on.
Don't know what we're talking about. I just missed the last story.
Oh, I know what it is. It's a representative who shared that very famous meme on the internet, all lives splatter, of a pickup truck running over protesters.
Got it.
Which, by the way, is like legal in 18 states. Or not legal, but advanced legislation in 18 states.
Well, there were lawmakers that proposed it.
Yeah,
but luckily at this point, nothing has passed because giving people the ability to murder individuals who are just simply blocking a road and it inconveniences you is not a good idea.
You're a rhino. You're just a rhino if you don't get on board with that legislation. That's what it is. It's real Republicans that want to splatter people that are protesting.
All right. Unfortunately, we have to start off with some pretty devastating news in regard to some of these natural disasters that are happening throughout the world. Let's start off with the earthquake in Mexico. Yesterday, a huge earthquake struck a town near Mexico City, and unfortunately today, the number of individuals who were found dead increased. The last time we reported this story, the death toll was up to 100 people. Now, unfortunately, it has more than doubled to 225 people. Authorities are expected to find more dead bodies as they try to recover bodies from underneath rubble. Now, the 7.1 magnitude quake turned dozens of buildings in central Mexico into dust and debris, killing at least 225 people. It occurred at a depth of 32 miles, which experts consider to be shallow and thus more destructive. So the more shallow it is, the more damage it's likely to cause, the more deaths are likely to result from this earthquake. 25 bodies, 21 of them children, were found in the debris of the Enrique Robsamen School in Mexico City's Coapa District. So there are schools that not only faced a significant amount of damage, but had students in them, meaning that kids died as a result of this earthquake as well. More than 2,000 public schools suffered damage in the quake. And less than 2 weeks ago, a magnitude 8.1 earthquake struck off Mexico's southern coast, killing at least 90 people. Now, the earthquake that struck yesterday happened on the same day. It was the 32nd anniversary of a giant earthquake that struck the same area in 1985. And the fact that this latest earthquake fell on the same day is crazy. And anyone who knows anything about earthquakes, you can't really predict them.
No. However, there is an unintentional, slight positive thing that it happened on this day in particular. And I talked to Jaime and a bunch of people that are on the ground before coming on the show today. And what they were telling me is that every single year, because that earthquake was so devastating, they will have earthquake drills. Yeah. And on that day, right before the earthquake struck, 2 hours before actually, they had already had done an earthquake drill. So it was fresh on their minds. So that's the reason why a lot of that damage could have, like human lives were mitigated in some capacity. And another reason why 200 people is a lot of people, of course, and this is devastating, it's terrible. But in comparison to the 32 years ago, the earthquake that happened 32 years ago, where 10,000 people died and also 5,000 people could not be found within the rubble. They say that the numbers are slated to go all the way up to 1,000. But again, because Mexico City has been impacted before, they were ready for it. Obviously, they changed the code and regulation around how these buildings should be built. And the buildings that crumbled and fell were mostly had structural damage from the previous earthquakes. an older building.
And that just speaks to the importance of regulation. And I'm not talking about over-regulating things, but building regulation to mitigate the potential damage and destruction of natural disasters makes a lot of sense. And when Hurricane Harvey struck, you know, there was quite a bit of criticism in regard to new developments that didn't take regulations into consideration, and, yeah. and as a result, you know, led to more damage that put more people in harm's way.
Right. A lot of that had to do with where they were building.
Right.
In addition to how they were building, but where they were building, a lot of what's necessary in a floodplain is to, for you to have natural areas where all that water can go. But with an increased housing demand, as the economics of the area boomed, they kind of changed, they shuffled around their priorities, and it ended up putting a lot of concrete down instead of natural waste areas where they could channel all the water. Mexico City is an interesting situation because not only is the shallow depth of this earthquake important because it increases the amount of damage that it creates, but it also increases the likelihood for there to be aftershocks. And you and I kind of spoke about this yesterday. One of the psychological tolls of an earthquake like this, in addition to it just like being you reliving that moment over and over again in your head, is that you have to relive it, albeit a little bit less intensely, in the aftershocks that follow. And if you go on Snapchat, this is actually these are some flat bottom boats in some of the areas in the canals that have been there for a very long time that you just see. I mean, this is the initial earthquake. Since then, there have been many, many aftershocks. And right. one place you can actually check that out is Snapchat has this map feature that you can go into. And you can see people updating. And you see both the devastation, but you also really can see people uniting. It was yeah. interesting when it happened yesterday. You could see, if you remember the Occupy Wall Street movement, they had people did that, the people's megaphone, right? In the streets, just to get people to be quiet, everyone was raising their hands. Mm-hmm. And if everyone had their hands up, you had to be quiet to command the silence for the person who was giving orders on what they needed to do to clear out the rubble.
And also to hear people, and also not to smoke either, because there were gas leaks all over the areas too.
Yeah.
God, it's so terrifying.
And this stuff just happens. You see in the middle of the day, people who are ready and have seen so much devastation already, you'll see there will be an earthquake, and not only that, people will run out into the streets because you just never know. And especially at this point, it's just like, let's get the hell out of these houses. Because with each additional earthquake, you've seen that there have been additional failures of certain structures and they've fallen. And it's really, really traumatizing.
Absolutely.
But yeah. it seems like people are uniting and coming together.
That's actually interesting, though. On a positive note, at least like the Red Cross has even put out a statement that there are too many people in Mexico City that want to help. And what I found out from some people that are on the ground right now is that Xochimilco and Morelos have more need for rescue workers. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are shifting their attention over there. But Mexico City currently is overpopulated with the amount of people that are trying to help out.
Right. There were officials who actually said that it's so overpopulated right now and so full of people who are trying to help, which of course they have the best intentions in mind. It's starting to kind of get in the way of professionals trying to respond to this disaster. So, you know, pay close attention. If you are in the area, pay close attention to what the officials are saying. Cooperate with them and, you know, lend a helping hand in a way that's beneficial, because Mexico certainly needs it now. All right, but we got to move on to another pretty devastating natural disaster that struck Puerto Rico. Hurricane Maria has completely destroyed power and electricity in Puerto Rico. And at the moment, we don't have a number of fatalities. However, authorities are expecting some deaths as a result of this huge hurricane that has gone from Category 5 to Category 4, back to Category 5 again. And so it's been incredibly destructive. And if you take a look at these photos, you'll get a sense of just how severe the storm was. Now, an official for the governor of Puerto Rico has released a statement saying that in terms of the infrastructure, Puerto Rico will not be the same. This is something of historic proportions. And he also says that it's a total devastation and they have lost 100% of their power, meaning that it's, you know, difficult to communicate with officials there and kind of get an estimate in terms of the damage and whether or not lives were lost. But it's terrible by itself. This natural disaster is bad by itself. But you also have to take the entire context in mind, you know, what Puerto Rico is dealing with in terms of their economic situation. And this just adds, you know, insult to injury, and my heart goes out to them.
Yeah, it's devastating. It, in terms of how quickly, some historical facts about this hurricane in particular, it is the 10th most intense hurricane that has come and hit out of the Atlantic area ever. It is the most intense hurricane to hit. And in terms of intensity, that's a measure of barometric pressure, not necessarily wind speed. When it hit, you'll hear it was a category 4 when it made landfall, but it was only 2 miles an hour shy of a category 5. Mm-hmm. So it had 155 mile an hour winds. And it is the most intense hurricane to hit Puerto Rico since before the Great Depression. And the devastation is really untold. And there's people that were told by one of the heads of the infrastructure committees to evacuate or die.
Yeah.
Those are the words that they use. And it was absolutely terrifying for these people who, you know, kind of, when you encounter a hurricane, there's two sides of it, and there's the leading edge and the tailing edge.
Oh, this, gosh.
The leading edge hit Puerto Rico head on.
Because they can't send in rescue workers when they have winds of this speed.
Yeah.
Basically, and that's the reason why they're like, either bunker down or get out if you can. The other problem with getting out is that even tourists that were in the area,
right,
or even people that were escaping, you know, the other islands in that area from the previous hurricane, were basically trapped in Puerto Rico and they could not leave the island.
Yeah. Right, there were tourists that were stuck in hostels.
Yeah.
And, you know, CNN spoke to a couple of them and they said, you know, luckily the people running the hostel are taking good care of us and we feel safe. And there were others who said, you know, the building that we're in feels stable, but what we're really concerned about is the flooding.
They said if you're in a floodplain, you will, in a flood prone area, you will die. They said if you're in a wooden house, you will die. It's terrifying. And that may be hyperbole to motivate people to actually move to a safer area. But you were talking about the last hurricane. Did you guys hear about Delta Flight 431?
No, tell me.
Delta
about
Flight
it.
431 was the last flight to fly into Puerto Rico to load up passengers to get folks out of Puerto Rico. And there was this aviation blogger who was just kind of paying attention and looked at the aviation map of where all the planes were, and everyone was headed away. And he noticed, like, one is totally just going to Puerto Rico after everyone in their right mind has turned away. And people started following it, and it started to trend a little bit as everyone was like, ugh, I see it. There's kind of a band that they might be able to make their way through.
Oh,
and so they
go
in and they land. I'm getting chills right now talking about
this,
it.
Yes.
They land between the two bands. And they get in, and from the flight attendants on board, it takes a while to get, and this was like a full-on 737 or equivalent.
Yeah.
This is a 3x3 passenger, you know, mid-sized jet, and they got everybody off and on in a time that no one would ever think possible. They shifted the departure to early.
Yes.
Which, like, most people would be like, are you kidding me? They's like, we are leaving early or we're not leaving.
Yes.
And they landed, you can track the whole thing online. They got up and you can watch it try to take off into the wind, because you have to go into the wind. And you're looking at it like, that's not fast enough for a plane to take off, but there's so much headwind that it creates the correct pressure for that plane to take
off. Look at you getting all scientific.
Christ. I got goosebumps.
It's nuts. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you see. And this was, some aviation professionals that took their life into their own hands and then also placed their lives and the lives of others in the hands of other aviation professionals to execute that. And if you look at it, it was a ridiculous turnaround. But in terms of where this is going, for people who are wondering what's happening next, it's moving on by Thursday. It should be in Turks and Caicos, southeastern Bahamas. And if you're wondering, it's too early as yet to determine whether it will actually make landfall in the United States. It looks like most models are saying that it stays out. It gains a little more steam once it moves on from where it is right now, and then it starts dissipating as it moves up along the Atlantic coast.
All right, we will keep you updated on that and more. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, the Cornell story that I was telling you about, and we will read your tweets. Use the hashtag TYTLive to communicate with us. We'll see you in just a minute. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to TYT. A few TYT Lives for you. Lots of commentary about Hassan. So
really?
Let's share some of that.
Oh, boy.
Your mama says, I think I lost the bet. I had the over 5. Number of rings Haas would be wearing.
How many we got? 4, 5, Four.
How do you have the time to put jewelry on? Like that's
wait, that's a ridiculous question.
No, it's not a ridiculous question. Jewelry takes time and energy, and it takes thought. Like you have to think about it.
Not really. Not if you have the same exact jewelry that you wear all the time, and then you switch it by just like taking some off. If you have all of your fingers,
thought Hassan.
Brett is not wearing his wedding ring.
Yeah, no, I don't know where it is, but it's in the house somewhere. It's in the house somewhere. I'm new to wearing wedding rings.
How do you not know where it is?
I'll tell you what, I don't know.
You just got married.
The question for Hassan is not how can you find time to put rings on because multiply 1 second by how many rings he's got on. But
they like
that. The question is how can you wear rings and not just be like this all the time?
No, it's not weird to me at all.
I hate it. I love her. So we got married.
Uh-huh.
But the symbol
but you don't
of
love
our
the
love.
Ring. Yeah.
The one she got me, it's like from a gift shop. It's tungsten, it's heavy. So like I was always like this.
It's not comfort fit.
So like my finger, yeah.
You gotta get a comfort fit wedding ring.
I don't know anything about rings, even though I'm wearing the most rings currently.
Well,
okay. What's a comfort we gotta go. Okay. Heiserberg says every time Hassan is on the main show, Jacory and Arthur should be standing behind him, berating him.
That's funny.
That's a reference to a fun Jacory and Arthur episode.
New one out.
Yeah.
New episode called The Audition. Yes. My favorite show on TYT. Check it out.
Well,
I'm in this one. Everyone's in this one.
I'm not in it, but I'm personally offended that that's your favorite show.
Why wouldn't it be?
It should be The Breakdown.
Okay, first of all, you should say the name of that show at the beginning, because at the end, like I've already clicked off. I was like, oh, this is The Breakdown. Now it is.
It's all good. It doesn't matter.
But I don't know. It's too newsy. We do news all day. Jacory and Arthur is a welcomed respite from the horrors of daily life.
True.
Yeah, that's very true. All right, moving on to some of the horrors in society today. A man in Baton Rouge has been arrested for allegedly murdering two black men and attempting to murder another black man who lives near his home. Kenneth James Gleason is his name, and luckily he is in custody. And he had been arrested and let go and then rearrested for other crimes right before he got arrested for these alleged murders. And it was because of alleged drug possession, and then he tried to steal a book. The story is crazy, and I'm happy that he's in custody, especially when you consider what his motivations possibly were. Kenneth James Gleason is thought to have fired at two men killed last week while inside his car before getting out, standing over them and firing additional shots. It appears to be cold, calculated, planned against people who were unarmed and defenseless. That's according to the East Baton Rouge district attorney. On Monday, September 11th, Moore is the district attorney here. Gleason fired three shots from a 9mm gun at an occupied home not far from his own. Luckily, no one was hurt in that case. However, following that incident, he did kill two people. The first known fatal shooting occurred Tuesday, September 12th, when Bruce Cofield was killed. Cofield, a homeless man known to people in the community, was fatally shot late that night. And then 2 days later, police say Donald Smart was found with fatal gunshot wounds. Smart was a popular employee at Louis Cafe, a diner near the Louisiana State University campus. Moore said they were able to link Gleason to the shootings early Tuesday when DNA found on the shell casings matched his own. Authorities also spoke to multiple witnesses who identified the same red car that Gleason owns and drives at the scene of these crimes. And so he hasn't been convicted, but he has been charged. And so we'll see how it plays out. But through this investigation, authorities are trying to, of course, find the motive and figure out whether or not this was racially motivated. And so far, they indicate that they believe that's the case, but they need to prove it, obviously. So they're working on that investigation right now.
What kind of book was he stealing?
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, literally my favorite book.
You just made that up.
No,
right?
Seriously, it was Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
What was the rest of that question?
No, the reason why I said is because potentially that could tell you what his idea was. Also, book theft is a very strange thing to be locked up for, but
arrested case, for.
Still stealing.
Arrested for.
It's not. Yeah, no, I don't know. It's what do we do with this story? This story is a murder story. We hope we don't sit around and wait for the final result, but we keep monitoring it, and if things seem to be getting left behind, we pick up on it. But I look at this as like, this is a terrible, terrible story.
Right.
About someone who keeps getting.
Here's what we do with this story. Yeah. This is what we do with the story, okay? We stop allowing the GOP to intimidate us. And when I say us, I mean so-called progressive lawmakers. We stop allowing them to intimidate us from draining resources in the Department of Homeland Security that are dedicated to investigating and countering right-wing non-Muslim terrorism in the country, because that type of terrorism exists, right? So look, in this case, he attempted to kill a black man, and then he successfully murdered two black individuals. Is it a coincidence that they're all black? I don't know, it might be, but I doubt it, okay? Dylann Roof specifically went into a black church and murdered black parishioners who, by the way, lovingly invited him in there to pray along with them. Right-wing extremism in the country is a real problem, okay? I'm not saying take the resources away from any type of counterterrorism program looking into or investigating Muslim extremism, but I am saying that, hey, back in 2011, when the GOP intimidated Democrats and convinced them to drain resources from the Department of Homeland Security so there wouldn't be a portion of that organization looking at right-wing extremism, that was a little bit of an issue.
I totally get all those things.
Yeah.
I totally get all these things.
Story.
Missing from this story is on arrested suspect's computer is found propaganda related to right-wing extremism. Right now what we have is terrifying person kills black people. I mean, kills people.
Well, targets black people specifically.
So essentially, there is a process that is going to unfold, which is going to fill in all these blanks. I say we keep an eye on it. I just am waiting for the missing pieces to arise. It's good to point it out now, but if it turns out, I mean, just from a strategic point of view, those are all my goals, the goals you have laid out. But my strategic point of view, I wait until we find that missing piece that links.
No, I get it. Look, I get what you're saying, because you don't want to jump on a story and start assuming things before there's actual evidence. But it's gotten to a point where we're seeing stories like this pop up in the news more and more often. Heather Heyer gets murdered and run over due to white supremacists in Charlottesville. Dylann Roof murdered those parishioners at that church. I mean, these stories keep coming up and people are losing their lives. And we have lawmakers and a president that has emboldened this type of hatred. And so all I'm saying is, there should be some entity in government that also spends some of our resources investigating extremism, period. Not just a specific type of extremism, but extremism overall. Because it's not just Muslims that carry out acts of terror.
Right. And we've seen acts of terror here in the United States. 75%? Like 75%?
That's right. We keep allowing conservatives to totally take control of the conversation. Right? And fearmonger. And it's just, I want the government to do what the government's supposed to do, which is keep Americans safe. And unfortunately, that is not what's happening right now.
Rhetorically, why can't I jump to all those conclusions immediately? Because when you look at the example of the president, he jumps to those conclusions immediately without enough evidence.
Not Charlottesville.
Right. Well, he jumps to certain conclusions immediately based on what's most politically expedient for him in his weird, instinctive, sixth sense for pandering to bases. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. The one side of me says, I would like to jump to this conclusion just because you're doing it. The other side of me says, I gotta wait because no matter what they're doing, I wanna wait until I have all the facts that back up this. I don't wanna make the conclusion first. So I have a pattern, I see a pattern. I want to fill in all the blanks to prove that pattern to be something that is actually what's happening before I say it is. That's just it. Well, I mean, I see this. It's absolutely devastating and horrible, and I don't want it to happen.
Well, even the Baton Rouge police chief said on Tuesday following Gleason's arrest that the brutal murders last week probably saved lives because the 23-year-old would have probably killed again.
The arresting of this person who did those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not the murders, but the arresting of the person after the murders.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, in the end of the day, they are aware that this person was potentially targeting black people. And I'm not saying that we should jump to that conclusion, but in the end of the day, we should be at least a little bit, we should feel a little bit safer now that we have at least one psychotic individual off the streets. Mm-hmm. I guess that's all you can say once you establish that this person is not a race criminal yet.
Yeah. And tie it back to all those goals. I'm completely in support of all those goals.
I would
goals.
Make the argument that
it's
if
just
there
like
was
this is a
yeah. I just think it's interesting that Dylann Roof, like just going back to that story, wrote a whole manifesto and was engaged in hateful rhetoric online. And you know, while the government indiscriminately spies on everyone,
right,
regardless of what you do, even if there's no probable cause or reasonable suspicion, they just indiscriminately collect our metadata. Maybe they should hone in on people who are, you know, sharing threatening material or hateful material online. Like, have a little bit of probable cause mixed in there.
Yeah,
so you actually target the right people instead of indiscriminately targeting every American.
Yeah, the cynical but probably true thing is, but those people buy a lot of guns. And I'm gonna lobby so that we don't do that thing, because I need that person to buy a lot of guns from the gun industry.
And then when that person ends up shooting people indiscriminately or even purposefully targeting black people, then more people will buy guns to protect themselves because they feel unsafe.
It's just, anyway. All right, let's move on to other news. A fraternity at Cornell is indefinitely suspended. In fact, they have self-suspended themselves after one of their frat members was arrested following the beating of a black student. Now, John Greenfield is the name of the student who has been arrested. I'm sorry, Greenwood. John Greenwood was arrested. Police identified a 19-year-old, John Greenwood, as the Cornell student charged with misdemeanor assault after he was arrested. Police did not release a mugshot. Now, the victim in this story said he was trying to get people to leave the front yard of his residence when a group of men yelled expletives and the N-word at him. And then they proceeded to assault him, punch him in the face. He went to the hospital for a possible concussion and a broken nose. Luckily, he did not have a broken nose and he is recovering fine today. But the fact that this happened is ridiculous. Also, the cops are saying that they're exploring all avenues of what led up to the incident itself and what prompted it. Police are also reviewing the evidence that they have against the statutes that they have for a hate crime. So they are treating this as a potential hate crime. We'll see how it goes. But the fraternity that this student was part of originally denied that he had any involvement with them. And then when they realized, oh wait, yeah, he's involved with us, they decided that they would no longer operate on the Cornell campus and that they would now use the building that that fraternity operates from for the students to promote diversity, which I think is a good move on their part.
Yeah, on the campus, the Black Student Union and others occupied Willard Strait Hall, which is of historical significance because in 1969, after a series of incidents, there wasn't a similar gathering of people in that building, and they issued 12 demands to the school. Among those demands were the expulsion of all people involved. In addition, they wanted to permanently ban the Psi Upsilon fraternity, and they wanted to turn it into a cultural center for black students.
Right.
In addition to a lot of other demands that are things that I think a lot of universities can benefit from, things like adding coursework on privilege and power, mental health personnel of color to be hired, in addition to training on identity issues such as race, sex, citizen status, and class.
My question here, aside from all that, is why the police won't release the mugshot of John Greenwood after the arrest once this becomes a national story. And a similar thing happened with Brock Turner as well. Like, why do we have to put up a photo of him in his suit and tie rather than the police mugshot?
I mean, would do the same thing if it was a black person beating up a white student.
Yeah,
right?
No, they always do that. You're right. It's always very fair
treatment.
And balanced. It's never like a photo of him like holding up a gun from his Instagram from like 7 years ago or anything like that. Like, will they pull his rap sheet, figure out if he's done anything when he was like 12 years old?
Are they gonna give him a drug test and figure out whether or not he's using marijuana? Because
it's cocaine. Yeah. It's a frat on an Ivy League campus. It's cocaine. He's got cocaine in his
mouth. I'm just saying, like, it's just very fair and balanced treatment when it comes to good old boys going to an Ivy League university and a fraternity, doing everything right. They're part of the squash team. They could not have this person could not have been a racist. Like, no, we need to change this idea that people that are wealthy white students can't be freaking racist. Like it's only people that are poor that are racist. No, this dude is, if he used the N-word and then attacked this person, like this is a hate crime.
Right.
What more do you need? Does he need to write a manifesto as well saying, I hate black people, I think tribalism is a real thing and that black people are inferior to white people and that's why I will punch someone tomorrow night? Like, is that when we will arrest them for a hate crime?
Everything that you said feeding into reasons why they don't show his mugshot and why they show him in a suit and tie, though I want to punch him in the face more because he's in a suit and tie in his like frat photo.
Brett hates people that wear suits and ties.
I do.
I'm racist against that.
I'm allergic to suits and ties. But that all feeds into what's going to be the angle, which is like, listen, this kid is not a menace to society.
Just a good kid.
Just made a mistake. He had an error in judgment. He is a frat. He's in a fraternity. This is a member of another fraternity. It's a Kappa Sig kid, and this is a Psi Upsilon. And you know, everyone's on. There's a lot of testosterone going. It was one big mistake.
That's what
they want to do, but. This is a situation where you go rule of law.
Yeah.
If you want rule of law, this is where rule of law says that as soon as you drop the N-word, I don't care if you're, you know, whatever reason you gave for it, but as soon as you did that, it is now a hate crime and you will suffer accordingly. Because the problem is, person in this situation, it is very likely that the squash player from Deerfield, Cornell, and Psi Upsilon has not suffered the kind of consequences that would befall someone in literally any other organization. Now, if you can call it a fraternity on the one hand, it's the same as a gang. It's a group of young men hanging out together. We cannot excuse one while punishing the other disproportionately.
And by the way, I'm not the biggest advocate for draconian punishments, and I might get a lot of hate for saying this, but if we're going to be lenient when it comes to these sort of cases, we should exercise that same leniency when it comes to black perps as well.
Let's keep it real. There has always been a two-tier justice system, right?
Yeah.
And some of that, of course, has to do with racial background, but a lot of it also has to do with socioeconomic status.
Exactly.
So if you're, a white kid who comes from a wealthy or well-to-do family, you are able to afford a certain level of defense that people from a lower socioeconomic status or an underprivileged background wouldn't be able to. I mean, think about what happened with that affluenza case where an underage kid steals liquor from a Walmart store, drives a car without a license, and then crashes into people on the side of the road, killing several of them. And when he's, in court, one of the defense, one part of the defense was that, he comes from a wealthy family and he's been so lucky and privileged all his life that he's never had to face any consequences. So making him face consequences now would be really difficult for him.
The rejoinder is, let's start now, bitch. Here's your consequence. You're going to suffer it.
Well, Ithaca attorney Raymond Schlatter, JD76, would disagree with your statement. It seems like
jealous.
when you have that entire thing mapped out on your article, I feel like he's probably a good attorney.
Another interesting aspect of this is the difference between what we kind of talked about this with schools for minors, what a school district can do to punish kids. Now, there's another series of debate going on over what a university can do to punish a student because it exists outside of the criminal law system. So Cornell seems like they've taken certain steps, but they don't really have to. And they don't have to go in line with what happened with what the conclusion of a legal debate might be. You have at the University of Southern California, they had a kicker who was kicked off the football team because he was found choking his girlfriend.
Wow.
And she afterwards maintains, listen, nothing happened. It's a misunderstanding. SC is like, listen, we have your statement and the statement of other people saying it did happen. We can't wait for the conclusion of the legal battle. We're going to kick this kid off because we're not beholden to the legal system. We have our own code of conduct and he violated that, so he's off.
So
Cornell can act outside of that system and say, listen, we don't have to wait until he's convicted or not. We can get rid of this person based on what we think is a preponderance of evidence or whatever their standard is.
Right. I think a great solution to all of this is concealed carry on college campuses. Because,
Wow, you're so right.
No, but think about that. Like, that's what the NRA pushes for, and that's what members of the GOP who are funded by the NRA push for. Yeah, concealed carry on college campuses. Let's give these kids a gun.
Just saying, he wouldn't have broken his nose. He would have efficiently murdered him.
That's right. That's right. So whether it was racially motivated or not, this was a violent act, and you put a weapon in that person's hand, and it would have ended much worse.
Another thing is for schools like Cornell, for like top-tier private schools, the thing they think about when weighing what their conclusion will be is absolutely reputation, reputation, reputation. So if everyone watching out there makes a big stink about this, you can absolutely, especially in the case of an Ivy League school, affect change. Because people like SC, they had been under intense scrutiny because of other violations in the past, and so they wanted to get ahead of the next one. If you go and hold Cornell to intense scrutiny, they will do everything in their power to stay ahead of the next one.
Yeah. All right, I am gonna skip ahead to sex robots.
Please do. I need a sex robot after all this shit.
It's a very old school second hour type story.
I know. I was just thinking that too when I saw this.
And we need a little bit of a break from all the terrible stuff that's going on.
I thought you were hitting the NRA pretty hard. I thought we were for sure going to cover the NRA.
It's a really good story that we're skipping.
Yeah,
if we have time, we should.
I agree.
Okay, let's do that then. Sorry, guys.
I really like that.
I didn't know if you guys were into the story, but I do agree. So let's do it. Okay. The Trump administration is planning on loosening restrictions on the export of small arms to foreigners who want to buy guns that are manufactured here in the United States. Now, before I get into what the Trump administration is doing and how this is likely to impact not only foreigners, but people in the United States, I just want to be clear that this was not a policy that began under the Trump administration. It actually has been in the works for the last 5 years. And one of the reasons why the Obama administration never did this was because every time they wanted to, there would be a mass shooting in the US, and didn't really play out well politically to support this type of policy. Now, aides to President Donald Trump are completing a plan to shift oversight of international non-military firearm sales from the State Department to the Commerce Department. According to a senior administration official, there will be more leeway to do arms sales. You could really turn the spotlight on if you do it the right way. Now, let me break things down a little bit. So when it comes to the Defense Department, if they are in charge of oversight in regard to the sale of small arms to foreigners, they're gonna have stricter regulations, right? Because they're gonna keep national security in mind. They might be a little more considerate about civil rights abroad and how these weapons might be misused. But when it comes to the Commerce Department, it's a little different. They deal with trade. And so if the goal here is to help benefit weapons manufacturers in the United States and increase exports, well, this is what the Commerce Department would want to do. So there's going to be less regulation, less oversight. The changes, which can be enacted without congressional approval, could be made public this fall, followed by a period of public comment with implementation as early as the first half of next year. Now, Saudi Arabia is one of the main countries that's interested in enjoying the benefits of this program and its lack of oversight.
Well, it's not just small arms that we sell to Saudi Arabia, as we found out after Donald Trump's Saudi visit.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
We sell them bombs too.
Of course we do, which is fascinating considering Saudi Arabia's involvement in what happened on 9/11. But there's no travel ban from Saudi Arabia, maybe because there's some financial interest that Trump has with that country, right? Now, since Trump was elected in November, the share price for gun manufacturers actually has gone down. And that's because Americans are less concerned about gun regulation under Republican leadership. And so since stock prices have gone down, I'm guessing, and this is speculation on my part, that it kind of led Trump and his officials to decide to, you know, really go for this policy. And by the way, it does not require congressional approval. This can be done unilaterally by the executive branch. On Tuesday, following the Reuters report on the administration's plans, the share prices, though, of these gun manufacturers did go up as much as 18%. So gun manufacturers get to make some money, and the amount of sales, foreign sales, is expected to go up as much as 15 to 20% annually.
That, by the way, that's my favorite factoid ever of all time, is that domestic gun sales fall significantly under Donald Trump. And the NRA, which has nothing to do with protecting your constitutional Second Amendment rights at all, and everything to do with the financial interests of the gun manufacturers that they represent, is so desperate to sell more guns that they are now running on this narrative with Dana Loesch, if you guys remember, and this is something I covered a couple of times, like where they're running on this narrative that a civil war is likely to happen, and that there are protesters out on the streets that are violent Antifa thugs, and you need to arm yourself to potentially defend yourself.
Right.
Like they've gone to such lengths that they would literally start a civil war if they potentially could. And now instead of doing that, we're going to be exporting our second most successful industry after Hollywood, which is just gun violence. And now, you know, France can have more of that. When we think about mitigating the damage of terrorism in Europe, a big part of that is because they do have very strict gun control laws, and that it is very difficult to find small arms, as they call, like small arms, for those of you who don't know, assault rifles are still considered under small arms, like an AR-15. Now they'll be able to mow down crowds with the same efficiency that they'd be able to do here, like they do in San Bernardino, for example.
If we sell guns to Saudi Arabia, I wonder how the right will respond to the fact that you're arming Arabs.
What do you mean? We arm Arabs all
the
time. I know,
but putting it together, I know you're doing it, but like that's what it is. You're putting the gun in the hand of. I mean, the what you're saying about the Civil War is coming. It's the Second Amendment's wording is to like create militias, you know, to have a well-regulated militia. We're arming militias, and the difference is now we can't track it. We can't. There's no executive branch involved. And yeah, you should be cynical of the executive branch when they're making deals with foreign governments, but especially you should be cynical of these companies that are just going to try to pour guns in the hands of literally anyone. You talked about Fast and Furious being like a government or, you know, operation that funneled guns in there and then lost track of them. There is no original keep track of them aspect possible now.
That's right.
It's just going to be in there, and they're going to be in the hands of whoever wants to buy one.
So the reporter that worked on this story was interviewed, and it was kind of interesting because his take, I don't know if he was trying to remain objective, but in doing so, he actually ended up appearing to be way more biased. But he wasn't necessarily against this policy because he had the same mentality of, well, you know, if those bad guys want to get their hands on guns, they'll get their hands on guns anyway. So let's just lift regulations and do away with oversight and just increase the number of guns.
And make it way easier for bad guys to get guns.
I mean, okay. I mean, if that's your argument, then you don't get to complain when the wrong people get their hands on their guns, right? Because you gotta, you know, follow the paper trail. And as Brett perfectly mentions, there isn't really gonna be a paper trail. We're not going to track where these guns go or what they're gonna be used for. There's a lot of unrest in a lot of countries right now.
They're gonna kill American soldiers. These guns are going to kill American soldiers eventually.
But this isn't new. Like, we've been arming rebel factions that end up turning on American soldiers since, I don't know, this is like 30 years ago. Like, even longer than that. We've always been doing that. And it's not new.
That's imperialism.
We might as well give them small arms on top of the heat-seeking missiles that we're supplying the Saudi Arabian military with so they can fucking destroy Yemen. And now at least like the civilians will get to have fun with AR-15s and be able to shoot whatever kind of slaves they own in their compounds if they act out.
Chinese sex robots.
Yes, okay, so let's do that. And then we gotta end the show. We're running out of time. Entrepreneurial individuals in China wanted to help men in China who maybe aren't getting a little bit of action and maybe want to have sex with robots.
Yes.
Okay, so they created an app. The app was advertised on the microblogging platform Weibo, a sharing girlfriend service offering realistic sex dolls that were totally submissive and can meet the needs of a single homeboy. I like their use of homeboy there.
Homeboy.
Now the sex dolls came in 5 models reflecting different ethnicities: Greek bikini model, US Wonder Woman, Korean housewife, Russian teenager, and Hong Kong car race cheerleader. Now, officials in China have put a stop to this. And they're saying that it's unacceptable. Chinese police slapped a fine of several thousand yuan on the company for holding vulgar activities disturbing social order, and that's according to local media reports. Now, keep in mind that because of China's one-child policy, which they've loosened a bit recently, there are more men in China than women. In fact, China faces an enormous gender imbalance, with men of marrying age projected to outnumber females by at least 30 million by 2020. And so there aren't a lot of women, a ton of men. There is nothing more dangerous than men who haven't had sex. I mean, we're experiencing that right now in the United States with the alt-right.
I was just about to say that.
And so I like, let them have the sex robots, dude. Like, you don't want like sexually frustrated dudes running around. It's a really bad idea.
Horny boys turn into proud boys. And I'm very surprised, quite frankly, that China doesn't have this like massive alt-right community now. I mean, they do have a problem with sexual assault and sexual harassment and anything that stops that. Or, you know, pushes those numbers down as best as possible, whether it's a waifu or sex dolls. Good, go for it.
Don't let them have the Russian teenager one. I don't like the word teenager. It weirds me out. Also, if we're going to try to affect some kind of alliance, betterment, improve relations, I want them to be, have the US Wonder Woman one and not the Russian, because I don't want to. You know,
but aren't they
condition
fucking,
them to
they're
be
having,
more?
They're fucking.
They're making
the
love.
US.
You can say make love.
Yeah.
Are you making love to a doll? Or is
Me
it having sex.
By the way, they're renting these dolls.
That's the creepiest part.
Right. They apparently have like a removable, replaceable middle section.
What is your vagina doing in the sink?
But it's just fascinating that, you know, this business model exists. Unfortunately, authorities have put a stop to it. And I only say that it's unfortunate because it's people's personal lives. If they need this, if this makes them feel better, let them have it. Let's move on.
What do you think about that it was disrespectful to women, like the way they were portrayed?
Let's discuss that in the postgame show. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. Sorry, guys. If you remember, check out the postgame show. Thank you for doing the show with me, guys. We love you. We'll see you tomorrow.